A number of weeks ago, I started in the evenings looking at Joshua. Do you remember that? We looked at how Joshua, the leader that God appointed for his people, was the picture of Jesus, the leader that God appointed for his people. But we also saw that Joshua and the story of Moses onto Joshua and Joshua onto the judges brought up the issue of passing on the baton. Okay, I think I said that countless times over the last few weeks. And we've looked at how it's not just, there are two ways in which we can understand that. There's a passing on the baton that Moses did to Joshua and Joshua did to the future leaders. Generationally, there is a responsibility of each generation of the church to pass on the baton to the next generation. But it's not just to the next generation that a baton needs to be passed on, is it? Each generation of church needs to pass on the gospel baton to those around them. Does that sound familiar? Hopefully it does. And this is the last time I'll speak to you before December, because Digby Williams is coming next week and then we're into December. So before we start the Christmas series, I thought it would be worth looking just at one wonderful gospel declaration from God's word, Isaiah 55. Christian, you need to listen to this. Because if your heart is just slightly out of kilter and you don't love what is in this passage and the truths that come from this passage, something is wrong. Similarly, if your heart is out of kilter and you do love what is here and you find yourself won back to the Saviour, that is wonderful. That's what Christians need to hear, the gospel. Okay. We'll deal with this a little bit later about being won by the gospel so that we can be messengers of the gospel. What I want to do, I want to show you, God willing, three slides tonight, one of which is just the journey of the passage, and then just some things that people can say that this passage confronts gently but uncompromisingly. So some things that people can say. And hopefully you'll find this of a help to you. This baton is worth passing on. First of all, verses 1 and 2, have a look at it. You have this wonderful invitation that carries a command, a loving command. Everyone who thirsts, come. A loving command, come. But it also carries a probing question, because the command come is come to the waters. You who have no money, come buy and eat. Come into possession, even though you're skint. Even though you've got no resources, come into full possession of what's on offer. Come buy wine and milk. There is good here available to you, without money and without price. That's the command. Here's the question. Why do you spend money for what is not bread? Why do you spend your wages for what does not satisfy? Two questions. The same thing, really, isn't it? Why waste your money on that? The issue is not money, because what is on offer is not holdable. You can't contain it in your hands or lock it in a safe. Because what is on offer is the last line of verse 2. There is a soul delight of abundance. That's what God is offering. This is not to God's people, the Israelites. That was chapter 54. This is to anybody. Anybody. This is on offer to anybody who will hear and incline their ear, who will obey the loving command to come, who will listen to the question, why do you spend your money on that when it doesn't satisfy? We were at an event on Monday night, and Phil Arthur was speaking. Phil is a pastor from Lancaster, and he was speaking on the life of George Whitefield. And if you've been to events like that with Phil, you'll know that Phil carries a bookstall. He and his church have run a bookstall for years, and he stood up on Monday night and he said, "This bookstall, this is the last time you'll see me with the bookstall. We're closing the bookstall down." So he said at the start of the meeting, "If you see books that are priced at £5 or less, you can have it for £1. And if you see books that are over £5, you can have it at 75% reduced rate. So you pay 25% of the original price." The bookstall was packed at the end of the meeting. People were itching to get their hands on a bargain. In comparison to what they would have paid, the price that he was offering was ridiculous. In comparison to what you do pay, if you're a Christian tonight, what you have paid in the past, in comparison to what you've done in the search for peace, for joy, for love, for acceptance, for forgiveness, for feeling clean and being clean, and the price that you have paid for those things, God declares free fullness. Instead of expensive emptiness, there is free fullness being offered here. Now, not everybody crowded around the bookstall. And not everybody bought a book that night. But when God offers, don't chase stuff that you can't live off and spend everything you've got chasing it, when you can have everything you possibly could need and want freely and fully from me. That's what the invitation is. I could give you countless examples of men and women who have pursued wealth and found the wealth to be dust in their hands. Countless people who have sought intimacy from human relationships and found them to be unable to sustain the weight they put on, because people let them down. They're just human relationships. Countless people who have chased peace with God through working and trying to be good. Don't spend your money for things that don't satisfy. Have this instead. God offers free fullness instead of expensive emptiness. That's the invitation. I'll move on because we'll come back over some themes. Then the next stage in the journey that God takes the hearers on to is this. The invitation's content. "Listen, incline your ear, come to me, hear and your soul will live, and I'll make you an everlasting covenant with you, the sure mercies of David." The content of the invitation is a promised relationship from God to anyone who will receive. Okay, that's the content. The background to the reference to David is that he's promised David that one day and forever his throne will be established. It's 2 Samuel chapter 7. We're close to Christmas, aren't we? And soon you'll hear the words of Gabriel to Mary. And as Gabriel explains to this young lady what's about to happen and who's about to come, one of the things that Gabriel says is that he will sit on the throne of his father, David. The Messiah to come, and the Jesus to be born, is the one who will sit enthroned on the throne of his father, David. He will reign in David's place. He will be the fulfiller of those wonderful covenant promises by God. In other words, God is keeping a promise to build a kingdom of which Jesus Christ is king, and any who surrender are welcome in. I want you to notice, very simply, the last phrase of verse 3. The sure mercies of David. You see that? Another way of translating that would be the trustworthy love pledges made to David. The trustworthy love pledges made to David. Promises are made with all sorts of conditions, aren't they? You know what it's like, I guess, to make a promise and break it. Children going to bed. Promise me an answer in the morning, Daddy. Yeah, I promise. And morning comes. Daddy, did you think about it? Did you decide what you're going to do? I'm sorry, I forgot. Have you ever done that? Ever forgotten the promise you've made? Probably. Some promises are made with heavy, heavy hearts. If you were to read the story of John the Baptist being beheaded, the story is Herod makes a promise to his stepdaughter. I'll give you anything, up to half the kingdom. Ask what you want, I'll give it to you. Give me the head of John the Baptist. He doesn't want to do it, does he? But he's got to keep his promise with a heavy heart. And he does. He keeps his promise with a heavy heart. Some promises are broken. Some promises are kept with a heavy heart. And some promises are made because it's financial necessity. So if you go to a supermarket in the next few weeks, there'll be price promises, won't there? They're not really interested in your welfare. They're interested in your cash. I trust you know that. Price promises. They're competing with each other. They want what's in your wallet in their bank account. That's it. Contractual. There's no affection for you. However they dress it up, there's no affection for how happy a Christmas you have. They want your money. But this promise that God makes is out of nothing but love. The trustworthy love pledges of God is what I'm going to keep. Here, I'm going to give you everything that I've intended to give to David and the kingdom I build. I'm going to give this full devotion and affection. That is weighty stuff. So that's the invitation's content. It's a relationship with God out of his loving heart that keeps his promise. It's seen in Jesus Christ, and one day will be completed in Jesus Christ for those who trust in him. So we have the invitation, free fullness instead of empty, expensive emptiness. And we have this invitation's content, God out of his heart of love promising a kingdom that will never end. Then we have the invitation's urgency. Verses 6 through to 8. If you've got a Bible in front of you, you need to read these words. Seek the Lord while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. Let the wicked listen now. Let the wicked forsake his way. And the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord. And he will have mercy on him and to our God. For he will, is a wonderful phrase, he will abundantly pardon. Or one translation, he will multiply forgiveness. Okay, it's a rich phrase. We'll come back to that in a few moments. Do you see the urgency? While he may be found, while he is near. This God who promises out of this trustworthy love pledge out of his heart warns. There's an urgency about receiving this invitation. Do you get it? And lastly, The invitation's certainty. And there's two here. There's the fruitful word and the future world. He says, and he explains that his ways are higher, as the heavens are higher than the earth, verse 9, so are my ways higher than your ways, my thoughts than your thoughts. And he explains that the word that comes out of his mouth and into the ear and the mind of the hearer will bear fruit. Verse 11. So shall my word be that goes forth from my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but shall accomplish what I please. It shall prosper in the thing for which I sent it. It's a wonderful guarantee. Everything I say will come true. Everything I say will come true. What authority. But also the future world. Paints this, it's a little bit of a bizarre picture, isn't it? Trees clapping their hands. But can I suggest to you, at the very least, it's a challenge to the idea that we'll be in heaven without a body. Because creation, physical creation, will rejoice. We'll rejoice in what God will do. Okay? So you've got fields, mountains, hills, breaking forth into singing, trees clapping their hands. Okay? And there'll be a transformation of barrenness to fruitfulness. Verse 13. There will be, as a result of this fruitful word, there will be a future world that is different. It's a theme that Paul picks up in his letter to the church in Rome. The creation groans. But here God promises the creation will rejoice. Such will the transformation be. It will rejoice. So that's a walk through the passage. I want to look at, firstly, some of the obstacles to receiving this invitation. I apologize for my spelling of invitation. If you spotted it, well done. If you haven't, wake up. Okay? Obstacles to receiving the invitation. What people might say. Firstly, someone might say, this is all there is for me. This is all there is for me. This life now is all there has been and all there will be. There is no hope beyond my experience now. As we look at these, it's possible that you have been there. It's possible that these things that we're going to look at now, that you've been saved from, thoughts that have run around in your heart and your mind, and you recognize yourself once, previously there, rejoice in the fact that this God has rescued you. But similarly, it could be you recognize yourself not in the past, but you recognize yourself today. Perhaps some of these are thoughts that are running around your mind now. Well, this passage challenges these thoughts. This is all there is for me. There is no hope beyond what I've got. Nonsense. Here is a God who knows what it is to speak life into being just by speaking. And he promises that if people listen to his word and come to him, they will know life abundant. The life that you've got now is not it. The life that you've had before you were Christian, that wasn't it, was it? There's life, joyful life, abundant life, rich life in Jesus Christ. This life is not all there is. Listen to what God says. You're thirsty? Come. That's a life changer. Are you skint? Come by and eat. Have you gone without? Come buy wine, milk, without money and without price. This is not all there is. God steps into the world with this wonderful message of hope. Just like he will do 700 years later, he'll break into this world with a message of hope through a child that's born to a virgin. And it's a life changer. So if you have thought, this is it, and now you've had your eyes of faith lifted up and you see Christ and you know Christ, rejoice, Christian. Because that's not natural. And if you are fearful that this is it, it's not. Not because I want to be nice to you, but God has promised to change your life when you listen and come to Him. That's all there is for me. That's not for me. You might be reading Isaiah 55 and thinking, Stuart, I hear you, I get it. It's not my cup of tea. I look around the church, I look around other churches, they're nice people. I'm not nice. A little secret. People in church aren't nice. They've just been forgiven. That's a big difference. And if you knew what was in their hearts day by day, you might change your assessment of them being nice. This message, chapter 54, is given to an Israel who are far from God, far from what they should be, to the point where in Isaiah, throughout the book, he actually declares them to be unworthy of the name. Okay, they've gone that far, but he still invites them. And then to this people who are yet to be known, he invites. Do you see what it says in verse 1? Everyone who thirsts. That's as broad as it could be. Everyone. No one is disqualified. Not from hearing this and receiving what's on offer. No one is disqualified from this great offer. You may fear it's not for you. But the words of God say something very, very different. Everyone in verse 1 is a singular word. You, 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 you. You get the idea. Come is a plural word. Come. Okay? God is saying, you, there's enough space for you all. And the only qualification is not that you look good, not that you are good, not that you can make yourself better. The only qualification is that you come. Acknowledging you've got nothing to offer except brokenness, emptiness, filth, regret, guilt, weakness, frailty. That'll do. God can take that. And He will satisfy your soul. That's not for me. Somebody might say, well, that's not for me yet. I like the idea. I like the idea of knowing God and being satisfied in my soul. I'll get to it at some point. Verse 6. Seek the Lord while He may be found. Call upon Him while He is near. Let the wicked forsake or leave his way, and the unrighteous man his thoughts, and let him return to the Lord. Can you find anywhere in that verse or those words where God says, wait or put it off? I can't. And the danger is this. If you hear tonight or in other occasions and you know God is offering you life through Christ, His servant who dies in your place. And if you decide to wait, even for a while, do you know what you're doing? You're ignoring the call. The call says, seek. Not tuck it away somewhere in the corner. The call says, call, verse 6. The call says, forsake your way. Leave and turn. That's what it says. And if you leave it a while, you're deciding in your heart to ignore those great calls. Let me be clear. You are allowed to say, that's not for me yet. But it's dangerous. This loving God who offers this wonderful invitation. He says, come. He says, seek. He says, call. He says, turn. You're going to risk your eternal soul on weight. Some people can say, that's not for me yet. Don't be among them. Somebody might say, well, I can get this somewhere else. Satisfaction of soul, I'll explore, I'll find, and I'll enjoy what I get. The Bible teaches very simply, not just Isaiah 55, that God is offering something great. The Bible teaches very clearly that God is the only source of what's on offer. He is the giver of every good and perfect gift. In other words, there's no good and perfect gift anywhere else in the universe. So you can seek if you want, but you will not find anything that promises, verse 2, soul delight in abundance. You won't get it anywhere else. Some of you in your past thought you would. And he proved you wrong, delightfully so. Is it possible that some of you are here now? And that's exactly how you're living. What he's offering, I'm chasing somewhere else. Forget that search. And come to one who knows how to give. And has promised to give. Look at verse 7. He will abundantly pardon. There is no measure to what he will do. Some people, the obstacles to receiving the invitation there. Obstacles to giving the invitation. Christian, listen carefully. Three things to say. Some people, some of us as Christians, can say, it's not like that for me. Let your soul delight itself in abundance. Is that how you describe your Christian life? If it's not, you won't want to pass on the baton. Because if it's not life and life eternal, joy, life to the full, you won't want to pass it on. I'm a Manchester United supporter. We're not doing very well. I'm not into recruits this season. I don't want to advertise the brand because we're not playing very well. If you buy something from a shop and it breaks, you're not going to recommend it. If you're a Christian and your experience is less than what God has promised, you're not going to push it, are you? You're not going to recommend Jesus Christ. Can I ask you, Christian, is your reluctance to pass on the baton? Because actually, the Christian life for you, for this season, is more like misery rather than joy. If it is, and it might be, come to this God tonight afresh and ask him to win you again, heart and mind. If you were here this morning, what happened in your hearts when Dovin was talking about that special intimacy we have through the adoption of Jesus Christ? Did your heart thrill? Did you find yourself won back by a great rescue? That's good. If you find yourself being won back by this wonderful God who offers so freely and so fully life with him, that's good. It's possible. You need to be with your Lord. It's possible you need to confess sin to your God. It's possible you need to ask him again to fill you with this life of soul delight. As Christians, we can say, it's not like that for me. As Christians, we can say it's not for them. It's not for them. This free offer, they've got to jump through this hoop first. They've got to clean up that part of their life before they come to Jesus or come into this church. The only thing that qualifies folks for this church is that Christ is cleansed, that forgiveness has been known, and someone is willing to come into the family and grow. Is it possible that you look at people, neighbours who have been hardened against any contact with you because they know you go to church, and you put them into a mental bracket of, we've tried but we failed. It's not for them. Keep praying. Because this offer is made with remarkable exuberance. Everyone, come. It's not like that for me. It's not for them. Lastly, it's not working. I was humbled by what Jason Murfitt shared last week. How many years has he been in the mission field? How many converts has he seen? Remember? How many converts? If we were assessing financial input and fruit and success, we'd pull them out, wouldn't we? Do you do the same thing with the work you're involved in, whether it's this church or not? I've been working for years, seen no fruit. We've taught countless children through the Sunday schools and seen just little bits and pieces. As a church, we're working hard and seeing little. Let me take you to those words where God promises that his word will be fruitful. Jason stood here and he said, the Lord is sovereign. And he spoke of a lady who contacted the tribe a number of decades ago, if I remember correctly. And her attempts to contact that tribe in the Amazon were frustrated. She's back in the UK now. She hears Jason report, and that tribe has been contacted, and many converted, and her heart thrills. It wasn't her who did it. The Lord used somebody else. But the thrill was there. Because what matters isn't that we get used. What matters is that God's word bears fruit. Have you got a heart like that? God has promised that his word shall not return to him void, but it will accomplish what he set it out to accomplish. If we fear ineffectiveness, we'll stop and shrivel, won't we? But God has promised his word will bear fruit. I don't know if you recognize any of those, or whether I've just borne my heart out on the screen and you now know what goes on inside my head. I don't know. But Christian, this is a wonderful invitation. Isaiah 55. To a needy people. That is a baton worth passing on. Isn't it?